the recording really quick. So just one thing that we start with every single meeting is reviewing the Hyperledger Code of Conduct as well as our antitrust policy notice. This is really just more focused on making sure that Hyperledger is creating a safe and welcoming community for all. So I do encourage, especially if this is the first time for you to join us today, just to briefly review this. And obviously, all of this information is accessible at any point on our meeting agendas, as well as right off of our Hyperledger Social Impact SIG wiki page. So please do take a quick look at that, and then we'll quickly get started in another minute. And Alicia, one quick thing. Could you help me take note of all the participants that are on the call today? We just want to add that.
Sure. To Sure. I can do that. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Everyone's there. Okay, great.
All right, so let's just get started for right now. Since we're gonna be recording it, I think folks that can't make it today will be able to also view it. So just one quick announcement for the overall team and the community is the Hyper Hack event that we're actually gonna be co-organizing with Hyperledger India chapter. That's gonna take place between March 21st all the way until April 5th. So if you know of any student groups that are working in hacking for impact, please encourage them to register. And also if you know of any corporate sponsors or university sponsors that might be interested in working with us on that, please do have them reach out. So that could be a pretty interesting event that we're gonna be hosting. Oh, hey Bobby, just saw you raise your hand.
Yeah, real quick on that, I did talk to the people over at the Government Blockchain Association, and they are extending the deadline for submissions to August. So all the events in the hackathon will be able to apply for that award.
Excellent. So, great. Excellent.
I'll bring more information to the group next time we meet, but I definitely got it. It's definitely August would be the date for the submissions now.
Okay, that sounds great. And then Bobby, I don't want to volunteer you for anything, but I was wondering if you would be interested in working with like the teams that are selected on helping position them for that award.
Absolutely, no problem.
Okay, we'll definitely put you down for that.
Thank you.
And Arun, I think I just saw you raise your hand briefly.
Oh, that was this applauding. So thanks, Bobby, for that effort. I look forward to more information from you.
Thank you, Arun. All right, so I think we're really here to talk about a really revolutionary project that on the Covalence carbon traceability story. And I think for the group here, we've had a couple conversations about this. I think we all noticed quite a few articles on this on the greater web. Just want to make sure I'm seeing this. Oh, okay, awesome. So Karen's actually going to make this live on YouTube. All right.
I'm going to try.
Awesome.
I'm not, give you the co-host. Not guaranteed.
If you cool, do, I'll tweet the link.
Yeah. Either way, we'll upload it. But we've been trying to do this for our meetings now, and sometimes it works. So it's a permissions thing. So hopefully it'll work.
So Karen, you are co-host right now. Do you want me to make you the host?
Yes. Just a little bit, yeah, that's why I sent you the message. I need to be host to do it.
All right, let me do this.
So when Mark or I want to share our screen, do you have to make us like a co-host at that moment?
I think you should be able to, but I'm going to
share their screen.
Yeah.
You should be able to see that.
Yes. Okay.
Do you see that? Yeah.
Okay. I do have a button. Yep. Okay, cool.
All right. Awesome. So Karen, should we give you a minute?
No, it's okay. It's okay.
Okay. Awesome. All right. Sounds good. All right. So, So, Deborah, like I reached out to you because, you know, we have been talking a lot about this project. I think we have folks that have been working in the carbon traceability that are really concerned with some of these issues that this project is really targeting. And I think it's really putting as the forefront of the innovation on the blockchain end. So, you know, this has been something that we're keeping, you know, really, really interested in. We've been really looking forward to this for a few weeks now. I don't know if it would be best. So Deborah, would you like for me to introduce you guys or would you guys like to introduce yourself?
We're flexible. I guess we can introduce ourselves.
All right, sounds good.
So I'm Debbie Kestenschel-Kraut. I've been the Global Program Director for Blockchain Ecosystem Marketing and Blockchain for Good for the last few years. And I am very passionate about sustainability and making this world a lot better. And I'm thrilled to have with us Mark Herrema from New Light Technologies and his genius, and the amazing Ron Argent and Bill Stark, both from Cognition Foundry, who are on with us today. One of our incredible business partners, very devoted to a lot of blockchain for good. So I'll have them each say a quick hello here as well. Good, Mark?
Yeah, thanks guys. Really happy to be here. IBM has been a great partner for New Light and what we've been trying to do for the past few years, as well as Cognition Foundry. So yeah, excited to talk about the journey that we've been on and what we're hoping to accomplish.
Ron, I think you're on with us, CEO of Cognition Foundry. It just looks like you're on mute. All right. Ron's on mute, but Ron Argent is the CEO of Cognition Foundry. He's on with us as well. And he's an incredible, are you there?
I'm sorry about that, Debbie.
Oh, great, go ahead.
Technology was defeating me. I'm Ron Argent, CEO of Cognition Foundry. my background, so I had 31 years of IBM, and that's where my love almost, my understanding of enterprise systems comes from. And the last 6 years or so, last 6-7 years, been working with startups to look at how we can use technology, primarily IBM's technology, to help bring their ideas to life and to the market. And met Mark, must have been 4 years ago now. Loved Mark's idea, and I could just see, you know, Mark wanted to bring blockchain onto the platform. And I've been working with Mark since that point. Bill?
So Nancy, should we just run into it or do you have other announcements?
No, please proceed. Thank you.
Okay, great. So I'm gonna share my screen in just a moment here with just a few slides as an introduction. But first of all, we wanna thank Nancy and the Hyperledger Special Interest Group here for having us here today. IBM has had a longstanding commitment to the environment and being a responsible corporation as it pertains to the environment. And as I mentioned, I personally, along with my business colleagues here, are really excited to share the solution with you. And as it's been evolving, all of us were kind of chomping at the bit, I think, to share the story. So as I mentioned, I've been leading blockchain for good initiatives at IBM, and it's all about leveraging the technology, working with our clients and business partners to help as many people as possible with critical solutions that support the UN SDGs and to have a positive impact on as many lives as possible. You know, we've been hearing and seeing in a lot of the research that the Institute for Business Value that IBM runs, as well as other third-party research organizations, really seeing that more and more of the consumers out there are seeing how important it is to support a purpose economy and how important it is for transparency and responsibility in the products that we buy. So I think, you know, the time has come and is growing more in terms of the importance in this space. So again, really excited to share that with you. So let me just see if my screen will share real quick. And I'm not gonna take you through a lot of slides. It's just more of a overview to set the stage here. And let me get into screen show. Okay. So as I mentioned, the UNSTGs, we're all familiar with it if you're on this call and you're in this group, but clearly consumers are speaking loud and clear in terms of believing that brands, 75% believe that brands can change society for the better. And 55% of those that were surveyed, you know, feel that brands are a force for positive change. They're really looking for, you know, the companies today to be giving back positively to society. And 51% are willing to pay more for products and services from a socially responsible company. I've actually seen that 51% number go up in a bunch of other studies. So I'll probably update this slide next time I present it. But IBM every year comes out with five areas that we, it's our research division that, you know, represent areas that we radically want to support and things that we predict. If you saw this from IBM in Q4 of this past year, it's about, you know, radically accelerating the process for enabling a more sustainable future. So this fits right into that. You know, our mission as a company is to help our clients and partners change the world and the way it works. But we really also want to help support the UN Sustainability Development Goals. And this whole issue around capturing and storing, transforming CO2 to mitigate climate change is very much a big topic. So blockchain for good is really about having that single source of truth. I know I'm talking to the choir here, immutable, tamper-proof results, creating new models for change. What we love about this New Light Technologies client here with us is, and Mark will tell you a little bit more about, what he's done and how he's brought it to life, is this vision about how, you know, the greenhouse gases can be converted into materials that will help us improve our world. And I know that if you're sensitive about the environment like I am, you know, it's cringeworthy for me when I go places and people automatically give me a straw, you know, if I don't want a straw. So my family and I have been very proactive when we have sat down at a restaurant in person when we can and we're not in COVID shutdown to, you know, say up front, like no straws for the table, that kind of thing. Anyway, one of the two lines that New Light's put out is called Restore. And it's again, a biodegradable cutlery that's available. So the challenge here is really about, you know, the issues that we're facing with climate change and plastic and other, you know, pollutants into our landfills and our environment, and how the demand, unfortunately, for plastic in particular has been on the rise, you know, with all the shutdown that's been going on and people doing takeout. We've seen all the extra, you know, containers and forks and cutlery and things that are being put out by the restaurants who are just trying to survive. And then we've started to find restaurants on our own that are using, you know, biodegradable materials, or we're just trying not to water out at all because we're just seeing that demand has just been really impacted. So anyway, the solution here is about identifying a cost-effective, scalable solution to reduce the pace of things like plastic accumulation in the world's oceans and in our landfills, and reducing greenhouse gas levels through this carbon capture process that you'll hear about. And where IBM blockchain comes into play is to validate and verify and create an indelible record about that transformation of the greenhouse gases. And then the other product line you'll hear about is Covalent, which is the one you've seen in our recent press release together with New Light and Cognition Foundry, for a sustainable alternative to the luxury fashion market and how blockchain can help track and verify that. So I'll make these slides available for, you know, whoever needs them for afterwards, but, you know, you're going to hear now from Mark Herrema, the co-founder of New Light, and then who's going to tell you about the technology itself and how it came to be and how it works. And then Ron's going to share with you the technology stack and what he's put together with his team to support, you know, what Mark wanted to do with blockchain from both an IBM blockchain platform as well as Linux One and System Z perspective. It's a really a hybrid cloud solution. So you'll hear about that. You'll have our contact information. And then, you know, for more information and to go back, we've got these links for you in terms of our recent press release, Mark's recent blog, an interview that the three of us did together very recently in Q4, and other links to more blockchain information and how to reach us. So I just wanted to share those things with you and turn it over to Mark to tell you a little bit more.
Great. Thank you so much for that. So I'm going to pull up my screen here. Just give me one second. Try also not to be defeated by technology here. Okay. Can everybody see that all right?
Yep.
Okay, great. All right, so our story started many years ago. I read a newspaper article about methane emissions from cows. And I've always really been intrigued by this idea of trying to solve problems by finding the things that we agree on. And that idea feels like it has become ever more pertinent today. But the idea was that, you know, when I read this newspaper article, it talked about how much methane each cow was burping, of all things. And a lot of us, you know, we all know about methane from cows. But what was really striking about this article and what was different was that it talked about the specific amount burped per day, and that was about 600 liters per cow per day. Well, why that mattered was because it was quantifiable. And so you could take 600 liters and you could do math, and you could say, okay, well, that equates to about $20 per cow per year. Well, that might not sound like a lot, but if you've got 1,000 cows, you know, that's $20,000 of methane into the air every year. And so what struck me, and I quickly called a friend, my friend Kenton Kimmel, who was studying biomedical engineering at Northwestern at the time, and I said, look, everyone's talking about taxing or burying carbon, but this is also just a material resource. You know, what if we could find a way to take carbon that would otherwise go into the air, whether that's from methane or carbon dioxide, and use it as a resource and use it to make products? First of all, that's what nature does every day. But second of all, if we could do that, potentially we could come up with a consumer-driven pathway to reducing the amount of carbon in the air, a way that we could all participate in trying to help solve for too much carbon in the air. So it started with this article, and it started this chain of thinking. Well, okay, so there's a quantifiable amount of just material going into the air. Oops, being defeated by technology. And we also then said, okay, well, certainly for you know, for farms, that's a big deal. But where else is this being emitted? And we looked at landfills and said, okay, there's a ton of methane being emitted from landfills. Well, what about all the flares? If you look at pictures of the United States from space at night, you see these vast areas where there, of course, is a lot of light because they're cities. But then you see other areas that look just as bright and big as cities. But in fact, there's no cities there. These are just flares. And so there's an absolutely enormous amount of carbon going into the air every year by virtue of flaring. And then, of course, power plants where we're just putting massive amounts of carbon. And again, the sheer weight of carbon into the air. And so we said, you know, okay, right now we view this as a bad thing. But what if we flip the script? What if instead of carbon being just categorically a bad thing, what if we could turn it into a good thing? And so we asked this question, what if there was another pathway? And as soon as you look in nature, you find out that, in fact, greenhouse gas, and in particular, greenhouse gas in air and water, is in many ways the foundation of life. And so you have these massive trees, and those are made by pulling this invisible gas out of the air. If you look in the ocean, these beautiful things that you see, these are all made by pulling carbon dissolved from greenhouse gas in the water and pulling them out of the water and turning them into these materials that we see. And then at the bottom of the ocean, you've got whole communities that are growing off of things like methane in the water. And so this we find out very quickly that greenhouse gas is very much a part of creating and sustaining and growing life. And so we said, all right, what if we could mimic that? What if we could use greenhouse gas emissions as a resource? And if we did that, potentially have a pathway where, in the same way that when you grow a tree leaf, it's a carbon negative process. What if when we carried out our process, the more materials we made, more we improve the world. And so it was trying to take this sort of new paradigm. Instead of being less bad, what if we could actually go to the other side of the column and create products that actively heal the environment or improve it? So we started with a funny idea a long time ago. This was literally the garage where we started. And then we found some university laboratory space and worked on the tech for a little bit of time, about a year and a half. And then with that initial data and experience, we built our first pilot plant. I love this picture. It was our empty room when we started. And we started to work the technology. It kept getting incrementally bigger and bigger. This was back in 2006 or 2007 when we were building out our one of our first pilot lines. And over time, we completed that and were able to show that we could operate a technology capable of turning greenhouse gas into a material. And I'll talk about what that is. So our goal was to figure out not just how to make a material from greenhouse gas, but most importantly, to figure out how to make something that could truly scale. And so what we learned early on was that there are microorganisms that exist in the ocean that eat methane and carbon dioxide as their food source. And when they do that, one of the things that they make is a really special material called PHB. Now, PHB is a molecule that almost all known life makes, and we all make it as a high concentration energy source. So, in fact, humans do it too. We have PHB in our bodies right now, but plants and animals and microorganisms make this too. So what we set out to do was to figure out how to feed greenhouse gas using renewable power to these microorganisms and get them to make PHB in a way where we could scale it and actually bring it out into the world. Well, this is a lot easier said than done, and it took us a long time to figure out how to do that efficiently. But over many years of work, we eventually kept improving the technology. This is what it looked like after a number of years of effort. The line on the left was one of our first pilot lines, ran about a half a football field in length. And then after a number of advancements, we figured out how to do that in about 30 feet of length. And so finally, we had a technology that gave us the ability not just to convert greenhouse gas into PHB, this special material, in a cost-effective way, but also in a high-performance way. And so finally, we had a material here that, number one, is natural. It's made in living things. Two, in part because of that, it's FDA approved. And third, because it's made in nature, if it ends up in nature, nature sees it almost like a food source. And so it degrades it just like it does a leaf from a tree. Fourth point, because we use renewable power and greenhouse gas to make it, we have a net carbon negative process. And we'll talk about why that led us to blockchain. But as importantly, because this material is a meltable material, you can use it to replace lots of things, including plastics. That also makes it recyclable if there's sufficient material density in the area. It's high strength. You can use it in hot and cold conditions. And at the end of the day, there's no plastic. So we're not creating microplastics and all the things that go along with that. So a really interesting material that is made in the ocean every single day. And we're now figuring out how to make it on land. So once we figured out sort of the basic components of the technology, we kept working it, figuring out how to make it do different things, give it different colors, working our pilot plant. Finally, after about 10 years of work, we scaled this up to a meaningful scale. So it went from a 10-foot tall reactor to what you see here, which is roughly a 50-foot tall reactor. And this was super important for us because not only did it show that we could operate this at commercially relevant scale, but also it gave us enough material to introduce products out into the world. And so we did that. We started to introduce chairs made with air carbon, cell phone cases, to show that we could use this material to replace fairly large volume product types. But we also realized something very important, which was that if this material ended up in the ocean, it would actually degrade as fast or faster than cellulose, which is the primary component of paper. And so it gave us these kind of two really big value traits, one, ocean degradability, and two, carbon negativity. So we started by launching last year, the world's first regenerative foodware products. So these are all made with air carbon. There's no plastic in these products. So if they do, and we hope they never end up in the environment, but if they do, they'll go away like an organic material. But in the meantime, as Debbie was sort of alluding to, you can actually reuse these. These happen to be The molecule that we make just happens to be dishwasher safe. So you can reuse it over and over again. You don't have to throw it away, but if you do, it will go away. And that's something that's really important to us. And sometimes people ask, well, how can it be dishwasher safe, but ocean degradable? The reason is that water doesn't do anything to this molecule. And so you can use it over and over again in your dishwasher. It won't break down until it has microorganisms and nutrients to eat it. And so unless you're growing a chia pet off of your foodware products, it's not going to be breaking down. So really special product. And right now we've been launching straws and cutlery, and not just great from an end of life perspective, but also these are regenerative products. So they have a net carbon negative footprint. And we've been really excited to bring online our first commercial scale plant, what we call Eagle 3. And we did that last year. And that's now giving us the ability to really produce this material at larger scale and help us create the impact that we wanted. But one of the really important impact areas that we also wanted was to show people that you can hold carbon that would otherwise be in the air in your hands. And if you can do that, we think it should cause people to ask, well, okay, if we can do that, why do we have to let carbon go into the air? Why can't we come together and help solve this problem? And so this plant helps us do that. And one of the products that we've launched here is our carbon negative or regenerative fashion. So this is air carbon leather, and it's something that's really important to us because single use products are great, and we are deeply passionate about trying to solve the ocean plastics problem in this generation. But the oceans are not just getting destroyed from plastics pollution. We're on pace to lose half of our coral reefs by 2050. And that's not because of plastics pollution, that's because of climate change and warming ocean waters. And so if you're gonna address the oceans, you can't just focus on plastics, you also have to address the amount of carbon in the air. These products on a net basis reduce the amount of carbon in the air when we make them. And 3 years ago, we said to ourselves, you know, it's kind of hard to say that to somebody. And number one, avoid what anybody should do, which is be a little bit skeptical and say, well, how do I really know? You're telling me these are carbon negative. How do I verify that? And we recognized that was a problem. And also when I say, hey, look, this was a long journey to make this, and also a lot of steps went into this. It's hard for somebody to visualize those and really sort of make that tangible. And so we came across a news article or a web link or something about blockchain. And we said, you know, this could actually really be a great thing for us, because with blockchain, we could do two things. We could help convey the all the steps that went into making this product and do that on a very product specific basis. So not just generally what we generally do, but for that product that you're holding, what journey did it go on? And then secondly, we'd have a way to basically tag each one of these products with its very specific carbon impact and do that in a third party verified way. And so what you see on the bottom right here is a number, and I'm going to expand the screen here. But this number is what we call our carbon date, but you might also refer to it as our blockchain number, because with this number, you can plug it into our blockchain tracking system. And when you do that, you can see all the steps in the process. So here's a more expanded view of that. And so this is actually a date. So you got your year, your month, your day, and then your hour, minute, and second. And so every single product that we make in the covalent space, they all have a unique number here. And that time is associated with the time that the air carbon used to make this specific product was generated. And so we have our website here. We've launched a brand called Covalent. It's based off of the covalent bond, which is the bond found in nature. It's one of the strongest bonds found in nature, but it's made by effectively sharing good. And that's really the basis of what we're trying to do with, you know, using greenhouse gas as a force or a source for good. And so you see this little symbol up on the left here. When you press that, it opens up this page, and this allows you to use blockchain to type in that carbon date on your product. You type it in, and when you do that, up pops your product. And so this is my wallet. And if I type in this number here, my wallet comes up. So you see the product type. This has a really cool specific texture on it. And then you can click through each one of these areas. And when you do that, there's a little description. It also shows the exact date and time of when these things happened. But perhaps most importantly for us, when you do that, it shows the exact carbon footprint, which in this case is negative 0.083 kilograms of CO2e. And then also who independently certified that. And so now when I say, hey, this is a carbon negative product, and you say, oh, that's cool, but how do I believe that? I say, well, here, type in this number. And so it's so exciting to us because, you know, a lot of times when we think about products and their environmental impact, in many cases, it's a very generalized statement. You know, we're trying to be 30% less emissions, or these are more sustainable materials. But I think there's a bit of consumer fatigue because it's like, okay, well, what does that mean? And also, what about this specific product? What's in that? And so we're trying to sort of advance the conversation and say, what if we could use blockchain technology to kind of cut through some of the generalities and give people really specific information, and by virtue of making it so specific, make it actionable. If someone knows that this t-shirt it results in the use of 700 liters of water, and you can see that really clearly, and this t-shirt right next to it results in 7 liters, it might not impact your decision-making, or it might, but it gives you the choice. And we think, give people the opportunity to see the data and then let them decide. And we think that over time will lead towards consumers being able to really participate and change how things are done, and thus change our impact on the environment. So we've been super excited to work with IBM and Cognition Foundry to get this set up. We launched it in September of last year, and it's been really fun. It's been really joyful, actually, to see these products out in the world and be able to talk about how specific they are in terms of their individual impact. So I'll end there, but it's been a great journey, and we've really appreciated our work with IBM and Cognition Foundry to get to this point.
Thank you, Mark. So then we thought we'd have Ron share a little bit about the technology stack that went into supporting this vision. So Ron, turn it to you. Thanks, Mark.
Hi, Debbie. Thanks, Mark. I love the word you use there, Mark, joyful. And it really says something about you as a character, and why it's so lovely and remarkable to work with you. Because, you know, what you're trying to do is bring joy into the world. And so the relationship between Mark and myself started, as I say, 3 or 4 years ago, when Mark said his idea, said what he was trying to do. And it was about, you know, about this trust and transparency. You know, how do you do that? And how do you engage with large elements of society, you know, the world? Because Mark hasn't talked about his the extension of this idea, but it's really, how do you keep engaging with people? And not just on his own product range, but how do you do beyond that? And how do you link things? So I heard a few things. One was the trust and transparency, which is where blockchain comes into it. You know, blockchain being immutable shared data, but also scalability and security was important. And you know, my background here in IBM helped because, you know, my whole career has been based around building, working on scalable systems, you know, in banking, in finance, in government. And when someone's got an idea as big as Mark's, you know, to change the world, you need big technology. So when we first started, I just learned about blockchain. I know it'd been around for some years with blockchain with Bitcoin, but Bitcoin had like bad press. It was all about you know, speculation, all about using energy. You know, the amount of energy it takes to use one Bitcoin is the equivalent to, I think, a day's energy in Los Angeles. That was the last thing I read. So there was bits about blockchain that didn't quite fit with the message that Mark was trying to give. So I looked at it and thought, well, there's different ways of doing this. And I looked at different technologies. And the one that was just being introduced was a consortium with IBM, Intel, Fujitsu, Hitachi, lots of other people called Hyperledger. And this was it was a consortium of large organizations that looked at taking the blockchain technology into the future. And this was another element where I thought it fitted ideally with what Mark was trying to do. You know, having something that's future-proof, not having something that just happens today, but having something that you can build on and that would grow at the same size and speed and scale that he wanted to. So we selected the Hyperledger platform for our blockchain implementation. And in terms of scalability and security, you know, my background in IBM said there was only one real answer for that, and that was the traditional old mainframe technology that has been repackaged by IBM into something called Linux One. So it's exactly the same technology that enables the big banks, financial institutions, governments to scale up to tremendous scale. But you know, it's very efficient, very green in its use. So, you know, whereas you might require hundreds or thousands of servers in alternative implementations, we use a single server to scale up very, very large ideas. So that really dictated the technology stack was to use infrastructure that was hugely scalable, hugely secure. So, you know, if you're working in a bank or a government, you want military grade security. And this is what the IBM platform provides. So you get the security and the scale, and more important than anything else, simplicity. Because as Mark shows, if you looked at his initial diagrams, you'll see things were scaling up, and he was putting another thing beside something else beside something else. So his initial factory was a row of things. And you imagine scaling that up to satisfy the huge demand that New Light is going to have and Covalent's going to have. So Mark has simplified it by condensing it down into a single thing, and he's going to grow those things over and over. So the technology approach is very, very similar. You know, you don't scale out using small things. You use technologies that have got huge capacity for scale, and use those because it drives down energy and it keeps things simple, which means all resources around the solution are optimized. So the technology stack we use is the IBM Linux One server based on premise. So when we started, it was based on premise because of geographical considerations, because Cognition Foundry is based in the UK, Mark and New Light are based in Huntington Beach in California. We expanded into the IBM cloud, so we supply most of Mark's computing from a data center in the US, but done in a very very shared way with our on-premise solution. So we've actually got a hybrid cloud solution where we have got a seamless operation between our on-premise Linux One machines and the Linux One machines that are actually in the IBM cloud. So that gives us a rounded solution, which means that we can implement new on-premise solutions if that's required. So if Mark expands around the world, he can have on-premise solutions to run this solution, or we can expand into the cloud. So in Asia, in Europe, in Africa, and use the scalability and the expansion that the technology can provide either on-premise or in the cloud. I hope that was a succinct enough explanation, Debbie, but if you need more information, I can do some more.
No, that's great. I thought what we would do is open it up to questions, since we've each had a chance to share a little bit about this amazing solution. So Nancy, if you want, we could open it up to questions.
That sounds great. So, you know, for folks that have questions, I think you're welcome to message it, or if you can just unmute yourself and you can directly ask.
Hi, thank you very much. I just had a really quick question. I was just thinking, on your final verification, is that being set up as a non-fungible token, or does that give you access to the supply chain verification points that then resulted ultimately in that bag, for example? Thank you, over.
Hey, Mark, do you mind just quickly introducing yourself and
Yeah, my name is Mark Liberati. I'm working with the United Nations Volunteer Program right now, and I've been involved for over a year now, I think, with the SIG. Thank you.
there may be a more technical answer to your question, but I'll answer from my perspective. The what we've done is we've worked with a third-party lifecycle analysis auditing company, in this case with SCS Global. And what they've done is they've gone into, for each one of our products, we've gone through a full LCA lifecycle analysis. And so in the course of the data input that flows into the blockchain, one of the things that we also flow into the blockchain is the lifecycle analysis associated with that product. So I'm not sure how common it is to give consumers the lifecycle, the LCA associated with the given product, or at all, but we do it, and we do it with every single product and the specific one for the specific product. So what blockchain enables us to do is when you type in that number, you can access that very specific report. And so I don't know if you saw on that screen or not, but one of the things that is there is a hyperlink where you can see that CS carried out the analysis. And then you can also pull up the actual report that they did on that specific product. And so that goes into the ledger, and that's forever associated with that product. And so, you know, when we think about where does that go, one of our hopes is that this, obviously we can expand it to all the other things that we do, but we'd love to see this really grow in terms of a platform for other products as well. You know, imagine if you're shopping and each product that you're looking at has a really easily accessible number and data set that you can pull up and get the LCA associated with it. And so you can see all the environmental impact, whatever matters to you. You know, we're focused on carbon right now, but we also want to expand into things like water and power and you know, whether it's how the community is impacted, or there's so many things that are exciting that in terms of our ability to start measuring them, and by virtue of measuring, hopefully improving them. So we'd love to see this concept of putting blockchain numbering on lots of things. So this is kind of where we've started with this idea of putting this number on there. But we really want to see that as sort of a new standard. And I think in today's world, you know, never before has it been more important to find ways to kind of cut through the noise. And blockchain provides that sort of beautiful, you know, clear call through that says, look, this is data that can't be changed, can't be moved. It's indelibly associated, and it gives consumers the ability to really have that information in a way that's so specific. So we're hoping that starts to, you know, go just beyond what we're doing and really impact, and not just in community, but other product spaces as well.
And I love, you know, how Mark's explained, you know, that there's a lot of claims out there. You know, there's other products, you know, we call kind of greenwashing, but this is really authentic and hopefully giving consumers confidence. So for the Mark that just asked the question, hopefully we've helped address some of your questions, you know. Just one question that I want to, that's in the chat, but also Mark Herrera, you've talked about is other thoughts and plans that you've got for, you know, for blockchain in the future, other things that you have in the works, if you're willing to share from a consumer engagement perspective.
Yeah, I don't want to give too much yet, but we've got some exciting things that we're working on. And one of them is thinking about end of life. So we encourage people that if, you know, we intend for these to be generational products. So, you know, I'm hoping that I never part ways with my wallet here. But if people do want to part ways, we encourage them to send their product back to us so we can reprocess it and turn it into something else. And imagine if that happened for a lot of products, and you could start to see the chains associated with that. So we're thinking about giving people the optionality to be on the blockchain so that they're forever associated with the product. Obviously, there's privacy issues with that, so we have to work through that. But our point is to just try to show that, you know, there is no away, and it's great to, the more we can visualize that and make that tangible, I think it changes our behaviors and patterns a little bit. And we're also working on ways to help that inspire more connectivity too, to see how we impact each other with our decisions. So it really, it's just about bringing more and more information to people, where things came from, where they're going, how they impact others. And again, we think blockchain is a great platform to do that.
Ron or Mark, do you want to talk about like kind of like the why IBM from a blockchain perspective? I mean, you talked a little bit about it, Ron, but you know.
So I'll come in on that one, Debbie. I've had a close relationship with IBM for decades now, and there's lots of trust. I see IBM as a great company, innovative company, driving forward. And the way it picks up new ideas sometimes and takes leadership in the market and drives those forwards is really important. So when I saw, you know, this particular opportunity of using Hyperledger to tackle not the financial bits, which is where people normally tend to think of blockchain as being a financial tool, you know, to generate cryptocurrency. What we really use it for here is not, it's using it for social use. It's to demonstrate trust and transparency to people that you know, so much fake news that goes around nowadays, you know, what can you believe, what can't you believe? And Cognition Foundry, we look at using blockchain to tackle some of those issues that people have. Can I believe what I'm being told? So in Mark's case, you know, who would believe that you can make a pair of sunglasses out of the thin air? You know, who would believe that? It's really difficult. So use the technologies to show people that this thing is real. It's authenticated. It's authenticated by people you can trust. And so, looking at that, we thought, right, Hyperledger is the way to go. IBM adopting the technology. But another key thing that I've mentioned before is it's no use trying to change things if you're going to ruin them on the other side. So I mentioned the example of Bitcoin, the way it uses energy, you know, to generate a single coin. We didn't want to go down that line with that kind of technology. So we use technologies that are very efficient, very simple, you know, and that means you can design things that don't put a strain on the planet. So the IBM technologies are ideal for this. And that was a key reason that we chose the IBM technologies. But it's also the case, and it's using the stories of the technology. So people like Mark, you know, it's a tremendous story for IBM to use to sell its technologies and to position its technologies as doing things for the world, you know, not just generating banking transactions or airline transactions or helping newspapers run. It's, you know, how can modern day technologies be used to change the world? And I saw, you know, a desire within IBM to do that. And that's one of the key reasons why I partner IBM in this space.
I think for us, one of the biggest things is about scalability. You know, we didn't set out to kind of create a cute science project. You know, we set out to hopefully create as big of an impact as possible. And for us, that entails scalability. And so with this platform, we needed something that could really grow with us. We're looking to grow, you know, hopefully pretty rapidly over the next few years here. And so we had to come up with something that would enable that. And IBM and Cognition were able to put together what we think is a good platform that should enable that in a unique way. So that was really valuable, and I think we'll see the fruits of that more and more in the years ahead here.
Hey Debbie, I just had a quick question for Mark and Ron. First and foremost, Mark, one thing that stood out is when you were talking about the vision that you had for Covalent. You know, given that it's the strongest bond and being able to share that good. And I think that's something that really resonates with the work that you guys have done. On the other end, also Ron, what you were talking about as blockchain, not just being a financial tracking solution, but actually also being a single source of truth, right? Especially when you're looking at sharing that information across different organizations. I think those are a couple of things that really stood out. And I think even more so, right, most of the Hyperledger community can attest to the great work that IBM has done in the blockchain space. I noticed in the articles that you guys talked about Eric Carbon, And I was just one thing that I was kind of curious about. Is that something that's a much more advanced form of molten salt, or is that something else? Or am I completely wrong with what I've understood?
So air carbon is the core of the business. Air carbon is the material that we make. So in part, we call it air carbon because by weight, it's about 40% oxygen from air. And then the remaining weight is carbon and hydrogen that from greenhouse gas. So so air carbon is the meltable, moldable material that we make from either methane or CO2. And it's the material that we talk about that essentially flows in almost all known living things. And that really is the key sort of, I guess, ingredient, as it were, that you know, flows through all of our products as well.
Thank you so much, Mark.
So there's a question in the chat. It says, Mark and Ron, are you working with any other companies to move product data across different platforms? For example, if air carbon products are sold through a retail outlet that also has a traceability platform, which tracks some of the same data?
I think it's a great question. And what it brings up is, okay, what's next? once you get the platform in place, all of a sudden you start to have 100 other ideas in terms of how you can use it. And this is a really good example that, you know, what if you could share it with, you know, retailers and outlets, and what, you know, how can you get, now that you have this sort of tool, and it's, you know, tangible and in some level tradable and shareable, all of a sudden you can start to build. So we first needed to get the platform in place. That was a, you know, it was a lift. We had to get all of our operations fully integrated and on the platform, data flowing, you know, there's, put it into your supply chain. Every single one of these products, we have to individually, either UV print or laser etch these numbers onto our products. So there was an important operational, lift to get there. Now that we've got that, it's like, well, how do you use that tool? And so this is a great question. So we don't currently work with our, you know, a retail outlet, in part because right now everything's online, so we don't have a retail outlet yet. But once we start to have those things, then I think that's a really good idea. And I think it's just the beginning. We're going to see some really cool stuff that comes out of it. I also realized to the last question, I don't know that I did a great job answering it. So air carbon on its most fundamental level is this, it's a energy storage material, and it's kind of like a fat or muscle that almost all organisms make it in response to a resistance, a stress condition of some sort. So if we take microorganisms and you create conditions where it's harder for them to grow, in response, they fill their cells with air carbon, and we extract that. And it just so happens when we extract it, we can melt it. And because it's meltable, we can use it to replace all these different parts and pieces, whether it's from plastic or leather or other things. And so that's really kind of our core ingredient. And that's why we say sort of air carbon within, because that's our core ingredient that runs through everything.
And there's another question in the chat as well. So carbon emission certifications do need to comply with the regulatory requirements at times. Do you plan to cover or extend the use of technology there, and what challenges do you face there? And so I know you've got the third party already, the two third party companies that you're doing. But
yeah, we've had air carbon independently certified by both SCS Global as well as Carbon Trust. And when third parties do their life cycle analyses, they all have to comply with international regulations so that their audit meets whatever ISO standard or whatever there is. So we already do that in terms of meeting regulatory requirements. And I think as the world evolves, those will continue to get tighter and tighter and tighter. But they're already pretty darn good in terms of, you know, having global standards associated with them.
to all the questions I see in the chat.
So we're getting close to the top of the hour. First and foremost, I want to thank you all so much for taking the time to be here this morning. Really appreciate learning about all of the great social good projects that are coming out from IBM. And Debbie, we'd love to keep in touch if you have other projects that you'd also like to highlight. And as well, I think for Mark and Ron, we'd love to kind of keep in touch with you guys to see kind of where you guys go with this. Because, you know, I think this is really some transformative technologies and use cases that you guys are applying. We'd love to like understand, you know, the direction and be able to highlight that on the, on this platform as well.
Thanks for that. And thanks for having us. And we're really excited about what's to come. I think one of the things we definitely touched on today was that this is just the beginning in so many ways. So we can't wait to, you know, keep working with you guys and talk about all the different things that we can do.
Awesome.
At New Light clearly has set the, you know, the bar very high for vision and for the art of the possible with this groundbreaking solution that you've heard. So I just want to acknowledge, you know, Mark and his vision and his team, but also Cognition Foundry as well, as a key example of how an IBM ecosystem business partner can enable the vision of their clients by leveraging IBM blockchain and IBM Linux One for the greater good. So I just want to thank the gentlemen for being here and for all of you for enabling us the time to tell this great story. And we are excited about, you know, how things will continue to evolve in this space.
Thank you so much. It was great presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Thanks, everyone.